Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
Thanks again to Reno for jumping in during the 4 o'clock hour. Our Battle Born Hour was sponsored by Battle Born Lawyers. Greg Salerno down at Circa at the Stadium Swim. Willie Ramirez and Griff at the Finley Toyota Studios. We are holding it down for the last hour. Coming up in just a few minutes, we are going to talk to a legend in many realms. Here in Las Vegas, in the boxing field. I'll let it be a surprise. But in the meantime, you know, we've been doing this. We've been doing some shout-outs, Greg, with some different types of foods at different times. Steve's been mentioning here and there. We talked about the press room food. This is the second time I've been in here this week, and Bojangles was at, yeah, you're down there. But big, I mean, the whole break room's been overtaken by yellow boxes.
Again today?
Yeah, again. Second time. That's what I said. I came in, I asked Lucy, I said, what is going on?
That's crazy. Dude, it's so good. I hadn't had it until a few days ago when they brought it in another time. And I had never tried it before, but the chicken is unbelievable. The rice was like,
that's what I had.
Wow, that's what I had. So good.
Now here's the deal. I had the, oh man, I forgot what it was. The peach honey pepper.
Oh, how was that?
Really good.
Oh, nice. I tried their barbecue and the ranch, and they were both good, but those are kind of basic, you know.
Yeah, that's real basic. The first day, I grabbed a little thing of the buffalo sauce to dip it in.
Yeah.
And it was okay. It was, you know, typical buffalo sauce. But
sure.
I wanted to try that peach honey. It's like, it's almost like grabbing a mango habanero chicken wing, but this was a peach honey. I think that was their take, because a peach honey pepper.
Yeah, sure.
But it was good. And I had the dirty rice. That's what I call it.
Yeah, it's so good.
It was good. But they had everything here. All the biscuits everywhere.
Man.
Yeah. And if you don't get in here, you know, quick enough to get it.
Oh, yeah. It's over.
Well, here's the good news for you. I asked Lucy, I went, Bojangles again? This is great. I mean, and she goes, yeah, get used to it. They're going to they're gonna be taking care of us. So if you have not had, and here's the thing. I had known what Bojangles is. Excuse me. I just didn't know that they were in Vegas until I moved to the other side of town.
Yeah.
I had moved from the extreme north, northwest side to the extreme south side. And there's one now, like, less than 2 minutes from my house. And I hadn't tried it yet. And now it's been in here. There's been three times I've come in here.
That's unbelievable. Just throwing it out there, I'll be in there around 2 o'clock tomorrow. So if Bojangles wants to come back, I would greatly love to plug them some more.
Yeah, it's fantastic grub. All right, so you sent in. What just happened with the South Florida Boise State game?
Yeah, so I'm watching Boise State, UNLV's rival, obviously. South Florida had a punting situation where I think it was like fourth and something, a lot, and they wound up throwing a 45-yard TD pass on a fake punt. So I think it's currently, was it 17-7 now, South Florida versus Boise? Unless they went to a commercial, they might have scored. I don't know.
Well, let's give a complete scoreboard update, because we do have not a full slate, but we do have some college football in action. East Carolina and North Carolina State playing. They are in the second quarter. North Carolina State up 17-0 as halftime approaches. Boise State down to South Florida 17-7, 6 minutes left in the third quarter. Scoreless in the second, early, Jacksonville State and Central Florida. Wyoming, another Mountain West team at Akron, the Maction. I love weekday Maction, by the way. Scoreless in the second quarter. Midway through that second quarter is Wyoming and Akron. And finally, Steve's boys in Piscataway, New Jersey. Rutgers up 31-17 as they kick off the second half. Rutgers up on Ohio by 14. I actually liked the dog in that game. I thought Ohio might give them a good game. Ohio was in the MAC championship. They have a high-powered offense, a lot of players back. So ask them to put that on in front of you, because I think you're going to get, I mean, 48 points in the first half. The total was 52, and they're just kicking off the second half. Get that game on the big screen for you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I'll ask them.
All right, now listen. When I talk, you know, we've talked, you and I, extensively. We talked on your show. We've now hosted a few shows. We've talked about how long I've been here in Las Vegas. We've talked about a lot of the people that I've met, I've known, grown up. I went the other night to the Hall of Excellence down at the Fountain Blue. It's like a sports museum that Jim and Fran Gray, Tom Brady started, and there's a Muhammad Ali exhibit. Greg, in the lower right corner, there's a couple of tickets, and one of them was the Larry Holmes Muhammad Ali from October 2nd, 1980. And when I saw that, talk about the nostalgia. I have that ticket because I was at that fight.
That's amazing. The Easton Assassin, right? Wasn't that his nickname that back
was
in the day?
Yeah, that was Larry Holmes' nickname. Yeah, against the greatest. Someone who's seen many more fights than either one of us combined. A Hall of Famer in his own right, and my good friend Kevin Ioli joining the show to talk all things Vegas Boxing Golden Knights. Kev, what's up, my brother?
How are you, Willie? Good to hear your voice.
Oh, man, I've been looking forward to this. Real quick, question of the day for all of our guests, because Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, I guess they're going to get married. I don't know if you saw it, because of course it didn't overwhelm everybody's headlines. But we are asking what the best sports marriage of all time was. What's your best sports marriage that you can think of?
Oh my God, that is an interesting one. Well, I did see that Kelce and Swift got engaged, but not that I really cared, right? Like, I was just freaked out when they kept showing her all the time. Like, what's the big deal? He's got a girlfriend. We get it, and she's famous. But you know, I don't know. That is an interesting one. I gotta think. Think about that one off the top of my head. I couldn't even answer one.
We've had a couple of pretty dandies come in. I said Agassi and Graf. Griffin said Brady and Giselle, even though they're divorced. We had somebody text in with Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe. We just had Jeff Horton on. He said Mia Hamm and Nomar Garciaparra. Someone also said Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union. So some good ones. I figured maybe something would pop off from the boxing world. Mike Tyson and Robin Givens is always a fun one to talk about. That was a nice tumultuous relationship.
A little bit, but I think if we're going to talk about those, at least to me, like you mentioned Andre and Steffi at the beginning, I mean, that is a real power couple from the standpoint both of them could play, right?
Right.
And both, you know, unlike Giselle, right? So I guess out of that group that you mentioned, I would go with Andre, our local, and Steffi.
Okay. Well, let's talk about
Stephanie, I should say.
Stephanie Graf. Yes. Both of them, by the way, are mentioned in the Hall of Excellence. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I don't know if you've been there, and I'm assuming that you already have because you've been everywhere. But let's start with the big news coming up here in a couple of weeks. Canelo and Crawford. As we approach this fight, what does it mean?
Well, I think this is a sensational fight, and it's no question going to be the biggest fight of the year. You know, we've had the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship, but I think that, you know, these are two guys now that are both in the top 10, that both have an argument to be number one, you know, Crawford more so than Canelo. And there's history in the making, Willie, because, you know, we've had the four belt era, I would say, for a little more than 25 years, where you talk about the IBF, the WBA, the WBC, and the WBO. The WBO was the last one to be considered a major title, and that's been around for a little more than 25 years right now. Terrence Crawford is bidding to become the first fighter in the four-belt era to be undisputed in three different weight classes. He was undisputed at 140 pounds, then he was undisputed at 147 pounds. So if you go to 168 and you do it, you are setting a standard that is all-time, right? That you're putting yourself up there with the greats in boxing. And I think he has the ability to do it. So to me, it's a really significant fight because of who is fighting and what is at stake in the bout.
Kevin, from kind of real boxing to car boxing real quick here, Jake Paul apparently has another fight coming with maybe Tank. I don't understand it. I'm just curious, like, what you think of this in general, his whole charade that he has going on. Maybe I'm kind of biased, but are you interested in Jake Paul fights at all? And do you even think that you even consider them real boxing matches?
No, it's a joke, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, he's fought guys that, you know, have no experience. And to be fair to him, the one thing I'll defend him on is, you know, he is a guy that had no amateur boxing experience, and he's only had, what, you know, now 10 or 11 pro fights. So, you know, you see guys when they turn pro, they take a long time to get to the elite level. So we're not expecting him to be fighting, you know, the Crawfords or the Canelos of the world or whatever, right? You know, but we're expecting him to fight people that are boxers and that are roughly the same size as him. But what has he been fighting? You know, he fought an NBA player. He fought a couple of rappers. He's fought mostly MMA fighters. Yeah. When, you know, the boxers that he's fought have been god awful up until this point. You know, Tommy Fury being the best of him, and Tommy Fury beat him. And believe me when I tell you this, Tommy Fury stinks. As great as Tyson Fury was, Tommy Fury is awful. Jake loses that. Now he's coming in November. He's going to fight Tank Davis. Tank Davis, when he fought Lamont Roach, was 133 5/8. Jake, last November, when he fought Tyson, was 227 5/8. So now you're looking, he's fighting a guy 95 pounds lighter. Like, what is this?
Kev, I need to ask you, because what they are, and here's the other thing, to sort of defend Paul, I mean, to a degree, he really does have this, like, I don't know how much he believes in novelty as much as he thinks he's really in the boxing realm. Like, this dude trains like a boxer. He wants to be known as a boxer. So he's taking it serious. It's all of us that aren't taking him serious. But with that in these bouts, when you see a guy like Manny Pacquiao come back and then all of these outlandish potential matches and the fact that he wants to keep going, is there really any difference? And I posed this question a couple of weeks ago to somebody on the show. I mean, at this point, when Pacquiao comes back and wants to keep coming back, and now we hear, well, maybe here, maybe he can fight. I mean, is there really any difference in terms of now they're just all novelty matches? And I don't mean Canelo Crawford, but things like this?
I mean, the difference I would be, I was against Pacquiao coming back, and I was still working when he announced his comeback, and I wrote a column criticizing it. But at least when Pacquiao came back, he fought a elite fighter in his weight class. You know, he fought a champion in his weight class. You know, Jake Paul is not doing that, and Jake Paul's fighting, you know, he fought a 58-year-old man. Then he fought Julio Cesar Chavez, who, you know his history, and is a complete wreck. And now he's going to fight Tank Davis, who, you know, fights at lightweight. You know, Jake, I think, I have given Jake a lot of credit for bringing attention to boxing and being a good promoter. And that's important. You know, the fight with Tyson that he put on, that did over 100 million homes on Netflix worldwide. That is an astronomical number. And boxing doesn't get that kind of viewership regularly. So great for him for doing that. And if you want to watch these joke fights, I guess God bless you. He is trying to be a real fighter, Willie. And he has real trainers, real coaches, and he's going hard. I would say, you know, the way I would rate him now is he's probably a cruiserweight, not really a heavyweight, so 200 pounds. And in that 200 pound, I would say, like, if you really fairly rated him, 40th or 50th in the world at this point. You know, if you put him up against the top guys at cruiserweight, they're going to destroy him. But, you know, he's going to be competitive with, you know, guys from 20 to 40. And given, you know, how late he started him in boxing, hey, I give him credit for that. That's pretty good. Like, that's not easy to do. But you're insulting us with, you know, first fighting a 58-year-old man, now coming back and fighting a guy 100 pounds less. That's the problem with it, Willie. What is he selling?
Right.
You know, you make some great points, especially about the promotion with boxing, because growing up, like, Saturday nights and whatever, there's big fights, you know, you get together with your friends, you have parties. More and more, as I grew up, it turned into MMA. People are doing that now on weekends with MMA fights, you know, whatever, UFC 500, whatever it is. Is there a way boxing can get back to that? Or is there a way boxing can become more popular again and kind of take over those weekends and have it again where there's these, I know there still are these things, but it's not like it used to be.
Well, no, it's not like it used to be. And you have it, like, for Canelo Crawford, it's going to be massive. Now, that fight's going to be on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix subscription, you don't have to pay extra for it. So, you know, that'll be good, you know, for the public. I think the thing boxing has to do is they have to more, and it's never going to happen, right? But on a regular basis, more often, make the fights that the people want to see. What did Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta do when they took over the UFC in 2001? Well, there was two things that they did. They kept the integrity of the title belts. You know, they didn't go out there and let the number 28 contender fight the, you know, fight the champion. And they mostly made it, you know, it was logical fights. You know, there were times people disagreed on who got a title shot, but they made those fights. And then they made evenly matched fights up and down the card. So when they put the pay-per-views on, you knew, hey, even if I don't know who's on the undercard, I know I'm going to see, out of these 12 fights, I'm going to see 6 or 7 really good fights, and I might see some crazy knockouts. And boxing got away from that. They put in mismatch after mismatch, and you just look at the odds on some of the fights, and you'll see minus 1,200, minus 1,800, you know, and that's not conducive to knowing. Every once in a while you get a great fight, right? Somebody surprises. But over the long haul and over time, people got sick of it, paying a lot of money for not getting competitive fights. So Dana White's getting into promoting boxing. Hopefully, if he can sign some of the elite fighters, he'll be able to change that and go ahead and say, hey, we're going to make deep fights up and down the card.
All right, speaking with Kevin Ioli, Hall of Fame, retired now writer, I should say. But it's still, we still hear his voice. I see you being interviewed. You're being interviewed by us. So I think you're still sort of out there, just not pressing yourself into action, which is very appreciative but respectful in terms of long-standing career. And I'm wondering how much passion and dedication you're going to be putting into your Golden Knights and your season tickets. Are you still a season ticket holder?
I no longer did. I gave it up after last year. So okay. I had, and you know, I just kind of felt like the expense was just being retired, and the expense was too much. But I'll go to a lot of games, right? I won't be there every night like I was for most of those years, except when there were fights and I had to work. But I've been a hockey fan all my life. And I grew up a Penguins fan. I'm still a diehard Penguins fan. But you know, the Golden Knights surpassed the Penguins in my mind. So I have like Golden Knights are one and the Penguins are 1A. And you know, my four teams are the Golden Knights, the Penguins, the Steelers, and the Pirates. So you can probably guess where I grew up.
Right. And with the addition of Mitch Marner, should be interesting. The dynamic with Jack Eichel pairing them on the top line. What are your thoughts, and what do you think that this team can do coming up?
Well, you know, obviously they were good enough to beat Edmonton last year. They did not, but you look at, you know, the two overtime games, they had, you know, a lot of those 1-0 games. They couldn't score when they needed to score. Marner is going to make a big difference. He's one of the best offensive players in the NHL. He's a great distributor of the puck. You know, he is not necessarily a goal scorer himself. He can score goals, but he's a guy that's going to set other people up. And I think if, you know, he's going to make a difference for them. The question with the Golden Knights to me right now is their defense. You know, they lose Alex Pietrangelo, which is a massive, massive loss. And then they trade Nicholas Hague. So their defense takes a pretty big hit. You know, they're going to replace those two with Jeremy Lauzon and Caden Korzak. And, you know, to me, if I'm looking at going to the Stanley Cup and winning the Stanley Cup, you know, I think they need to shore up that defense. But the problem they're going to have, Billy, is, as you well know, you know, they've just paid Marner this massive amount of money. They're going to turn around and they're going to have to sign Jack Eichel to an extension. He's up at the end of this year. He's making $10 million in the coming season. And even though the salary cap is going up, those dollars get accounted for right away. But Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee seem to find a way to get the guy that they want. My guess would be you'll see the Knights at the trade deadline go out there and land at least one high-quality veteran defenseman, somebody maybe whose contract's expiring, or like they did with Noah Hanifin a couple of years ago, and then re-sign. I think you'll see them do something. But I think the Golden Knights have the forwards. Aiden Hill proved he's a good enough goaltender to win the Cup. I think their defense right now is where they need to look at. If Korzak develops and becomes an elite player in the, you know, in that mold, then they're lucky. But I think losing Alex Pietrangelo is going to be huge for them. They're going to have to do something at the trade deadline for a defenseman.
Once again, speaking with Hall of Fame writer Kevin Ioli. Kev, we got about a minute. Let me before we let you go. We talked about it at the top, the Hall of Excellence. Have you been there?
I haven't gone yet, but I saw it at the Fontainebleau on their website, and so I'm definitely really interested because me being a Muhammad Ali fan like I am, I can't wait to see that.
It's fantastic. You walk in, they give you an iPhone with sealed headphones already packaged up. You tear them open, you turn it on, you hit start tour, and it's each display, each encasement is of something. You walk around over 170, I think, artifacts, and there is a Muhammad Ali exhibit, but none of the narration by Morgan Freeman is longer than about a minute and 40 seconds, so it's nice because you don't get overwhelmed. And while you're sitting there with that particular display up on your on the iPhone they give you, you can hit a highlight reel, and it'll show you on the phone that they give you the a highlight of something.
Oh, wow.
To go along. Yeah, so it's really cool. It's very well done, so I highly encourage it. You'll enjoy it. A lot of nostalgia in there, a lot of sports history. I would like to see them have some Vegas specifics in there, and I'm sure as it grows, Jim and Fran Gray, Tom Brady did a great job. So, but Kev, I appreciate you joining us, jumping on, talking some boxing. Look forward to catching up with you, my friend.
God bless, guys. We'll see you soon. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Ioli joining us on Cofield and Company right now. Caller number 7. Two tickets to see Jeff Foxworthy December 10th at Planet Hollywood, live at the Planet Hollywood. Two tickets, Jeff Foxworthy up in December 10th. Caller number 7. Griff's waiting on you.
Live from Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
It is Cofield and Company as we're winding things down here the last half an hour. Willie Ramirez and Griff in the Finley Toyota studio. Greg Salerno holding it down at Circa. You surviving the heat?
It's actually kind of a nice little breeze out here because it's a little cooler than it is normally. I think it's about 90 or something right now, which, you know, it's better than 108.
You heard me earlier talking about the humidity. Have you felt it?
Yes, absolutely. More humid than usual. We were actually just talking about that during the break.
Crazy, right?
It is. It feels almost like Florida-ish a little bit. Maybe it'll rain. I don't know.
All right, so we mentioned earlier UNLV at Houston tomorrow. They opened the season last week at Allegiant with a win over Idaho State. Their next home game, September 6th, against Big Ten UCLA. Should be a fun matchup. UNLV will have a couple of games under its belt. If you haven't got your tickets, make sure you go to unlvtickets.com. We did a giveaway earlier. Congratulations to the winner. I believe I misspoke, so my apologies. I'm not even going to repeat what I said. So just go to unlvtickets.com so there is no confusion.
I don't want
anybody to get their feathers ruffled over a minor mistake. unlvtickets.com, unlvtickets.com, unlvtickets.com. The Rebels hosting the UCLA Bruins. The Rebels are going all the way this year. When I say all the way, I don't mean the national championship. What I do mean is I believe that this team's going to catch some momentum. I really love the vibe that Dan Mullen brings, and I think that they're going to get back to the Mountain West championship.
You know, it's funny because yesterday we were talking about this on the arena, and, you know, Poof and Doug said I'm crazy because I thought UNLV could finish, you know, on the top 25 team, top 15 team maybe, who knows. Right now, Boise, who's supposedly top 25,
they're losing.
They're getting their ass handed to them by South Florida, 24-7. And Florida has the ball and moving.
Griffin's grabbed the mic, turned his mic on. He's got something to say. I've never seen him move so quick.
This is a shellacking.
Shellacking!
It's an absolute shellacking. I had in my top 25 preseason rankings, I did have Boise State. I kept them at 25, just thinking that, you know, it was last season, all the success they had, it was more than just a single great running back. It had to have been. But as we've seen, as we're watching right now, the Broncos are struggling.
How dare that radio host from Boise sweat me during media day while we're sitting at the ESPN table, we're on Radio Row, and completely condescend UNLV and going, oh, you guys, I mean, last year was cute and everything. I mean, the way he worded it, it was like, and I was like, dude, you guys lost Ashton Jeanty. Yeah, but I like the looks of our running backs room. We'll be fine.
7-30 is fine.
Yeah, if you're a chump.
If you're a chump. I can't throw it. I won't throw insults, but this is bad.
This is who's challenging the UNLV Rebels?
This is who's challenging for the Mountain West Conference title, apparently,
goodness.
This year.
My goodness. digging. They're digging. They're digging their own hole. You know who else is digging? Jordan Hudson. Apparently, Greg, Jordan Hudson and company have filed for the trademark gold digger. You sent this over.
Yeah, this is. I usually like it when somebody takes a joke about them and kind of turns it around on people and is like, all right, I'm going to embrace this, you know? This seems weird to me, though. Apparently, they're going to use it for, like, keychains and some kind of, like, jewelry they're going to sell that says Gold Digger on it, which, I don't know, man. I'm trying to judge people I don't know, but this girl seems kind of weird to me. I don't know what's going on here. That wasn't the only thing they trademarked, by the way. They've also trademarked other things, Bellacast being one of them.
Oh, nice.
Apparently, yeah, like who knows what that's going to be.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right. Chapel Bill.
Why are you hating?
I don't know. Chapel Bill's another one that they did. No Days Off, which I can't believe that's not already taken, apparently, is going to be another one. So, I mean, they are doing a bunch of them, but the Gold Digger one, a little odd.
Listen, comedian guy, comedian rock jock, entering the sports realm with the arena. Don't hate on – I like Bellacast. I think you said that. It kind of caught my attention. That's kind of catchy because now it's intriguing. It's like it's out there. It's like – wait a minute, what do we got coming with this guy? Because this is a guy, you got to think of all the press conferences he's done and how cold and quiet he was.
That's person, true.
This, she's bringing his personality out.
I guess. I mean, we'll see. Who's going to buy a Gold Digger t-shirt, though, from, like, you know, Belichick's girlfriend?
Maybe a robot. Because from my understanding, robots will soon give birth. Now, you sent this one over as well.
Yeah.
Will Jordan and Bill maybe hire a robot to so she doesn't have to?
Well, if it was the other way around,
oh,
you know, I mean, they might have to. But, yeah.
What's going on here? What is this?
Apparently, they've made robots now with a fully functional robot womb in it to where you could actually raise a child if you had to. Now, I guess this could be for, you know, help people out. Maybe if people are having problems having kids or they don't have a host for the child. I don't know if you call it a host, but, you know, whatever. This is an alien. But, you know, something like that, if you're just incapable of having a child, maybe this will help people. They could put it in a fake womb. It does seem kind of crazy, like Skynet / Matrix stuff, but we'll see where it goes, I guess.
All right. We did it earlier. We love to talk food on this show.
Mm.
We talked with Xavier Pope about Taylor Townsend's run-in in the U.S. Open. I don't know if you guys saw this, but how about this for a headline? U.S. Open fans divided on $100 caviar-topped chicken nuggets.
Ew.
Ridiculous.
Right? I mean, the first thing is, forget about the $100 for a minute.
Yeah.
Why are we putting caviar on chicken nuggets?
We are doing it because we just want to feel rich. We don't care what. We don't care how.
You know who I'm going to blame it on?
Who?
Here's who I'm going to blame the caviar on. We did a TikTok segment earlier. One of the best social media chefs. He's everywhere. He's on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. Is Notorious Foodie. Now, I think he's international, but his knife skills are incredible. This dude finds reasons to put caviar on everything. When I'm telling you his cooking videos go viral, people don't even know who he is, and they share his videos just because of what he comes up with. But this dude puts caviar on everything. It was the very first thing I thought of.
It's so weird. And, like, if you're trying to look fancy, doesn't the nugget kind of cancel out the caviar? I mean, it's like putting lobster on a chicken nugget or something. Like, dino nuggets is like the lowest form of food you could possibly make. And you're going to put rich food on it? Doesn't make any sense.
Dino nuggets is the lowest form of food. Right there with bagel bites?
Well, I'm saying, like, price-wise, you could probably get, like, 70 dino nuggets for, like, a buck, you know?
I really can't. Like, ranch. Ranch is going to taste 1,000 times better than caviar on a chicken nugget. I don't care. I've never had caviar. I'll be honest about it. Never had it. Will never have it.
So my guess is caviar is in the same department category for you as blue cheese. It doesn't belong.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'd drink a whole cup of blue cheese before I even touch some caviar. Because what is caviar? What is it exactly? Fish eggs.
Fish eggs.
Mm-hmm. That's gross.
Have you ever had caviar, Greg?
I have, but I didn't know I was eating it at the time. I like put it on a cracker, and the next thing I know, I'm like spitting all over the place. It was disgusting.
What did it taste like?
Salty and weird and slimy. All right.
Yeah, let's just let's.
It was gross. Let's just say that.
Let's leave it right there. Yeah, we don't want to go any further. I don't know if you guys saw this, but so the Aces closed up their three-game road trip after wins over the Mystics and the Sky. They went to Atlanta, and it was a battle for the number two seed. Okay, best friends on opposite sides of the court in Alisha Gray and Asia Wilson. Both of them MVP candidates in terms of like the top four at the books for the MVP race. Afterwards, Ryan Howard, one of the stars for the Atlanta Dream, said it's hard to compete when the home fans aren't on your side. You want to come see some Gamecocks. We have Gamecocks on our roster, meaning Alisha Gray specifically as arguably their best player because she's their MVP candidate and she's having a phenomenal year. But a little salty because the Atlanta crowd, a lot of them was giving Asia Wilson MVP chants. And Ryan Howard even said, just last week you were chanting MVP for someone on this team. Now you're doing it for... She didn't like it. She didn't like when the road team was stealing the thunder.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, though. I mean, when you get a transcendent player like Asia Wilson, I mean, you know, like Kobe. Cheers at, you know, MSG. LeBron's gotten cheers at, like, certain states. I think Asia is an incredible player. She's one of the best. Every single year, she's an MVP candidate. I don't see anything wrong with it. Plus, if you're one of those, you know, players that can't take it when a crowd's going against you, I feel like great players, they feed off that, and they go out there and they whoop up on the other team.
Well, not only that, but what did she open herself up? What did she open herself up to? Get it out, Willie. Is come the first round of the playoffs, if they sell tickets to the visiting team and their fans come in and all of a sudden they overwhelm the crowd, I mean, in a sense, it's showing that it bothers her. They're in their head. It's living rent-free, as they said.
Exactly. Yeah, I would never – that's a sign of weakness, like to your point. I don't think you should ever even talk about it. If anything, just go get fueled up and then, you know, feed off it.
Yeah, fuel the fire. I don't know. And I like Ryan Howard. I covered – that Atlanta Dream team for the Dream after the All-Star game came here a few years ago. And, you know, they had hired me to do some stuff from the All-Star break on. What was that, 2 years ago, 2023? So I get what she's saying, but at the same time, I don't know if you want to expose that vulnerability right before the playoffs. Not sure if you guys saw this, but Denzel Washington, one of the great actors, maybe arguably some might say the greatest of our era, he says that I don't watch movies. I'm tired of movies. Prolific actor, expert obviously in his craft, two-time Oscar winner. He just said, I don't watch movies, man. I really don't. Prompting laughter from Spike Lee. And they were just doing a topic in terms of because they're getting ready to film something, but with co-star A$AP Rocky. A.K.M. Rakim Mayers. I think it's okay for Denzel at this point in his career to say that.
I totally get it. And I'll tell you, and I'm obviously much smaller level, but doing comedy and stuff like that, like, you know, I don't want to go hang out around comedy in my days off or go, I don't watch a lot of comedy. And, you know, I don't go talk about radio when I'm not doing radio. Like, it's just, it's kind of like if you work at a hardware store, you're not going to go cut wood on your day off. You know what I mean? You're going to go do something else. So I kind of get it.
But gentlemen, we work in sports. Is anyone here in this company right here, is anyone tired of watching any sports once we get done with our, once we're off the clock?
Here's the difference, though. Here, and I was hoping that one of you might say that. Okay. Denzel Washington, off the top of my head, has got to be late 60s. Sounds Griff, how right. old are you?
29.
Okay, let me know in 50 years if you're tired of doing the same thing that you've been doing. You have a long way to go before you can say you're tired of doing something. Now, my first byline was in 1987. I've entered now in our field. We're in a different realm of, like, you know, social media and videos and streaming and whatnot. So it's evolving. But, you know, this is a guy who, you know, it's more than just showing, hey, we're going to sign you, show up, put on a great role. You're studying your characters, especially when you're doing biopics, right? Like he did Malcolm X. He did the Remember the Titans. How many movies did he do where he portrayed somebody that was a real life character, and you're actually spending time with them or around the where that person was to learn who they were. So there's a lot more to it than just showing up on the set.
Well, okay. Did he say he doesn't enjoy watching movies or enjoy making movies?
He just said, I don't watch movies, man. I really don't. And then so he said, I don't watch movies. I'm tired of movies. He's over cinema.
Mm.
In a recent interview with GQ.
I would say that maybe it plays more into, instead of, you know, the fact that he's been doing it for so long, making movies. If he's talking about just purely watching them, I've noticed that's kind of just part of our culture, or it's starting to become part of the culture, where movies are kind of falling to the wayside. You got this TikTok generation where the attention span is very, very short. People are not going to the theaters as much. But I grew up watching movies. I love movies. I especially love going to the movie theater. So it's, you know, it's weird. It's like you have to have an appreciation for films. And Denzel obviously does, being one of the greatest to ever be an actor and ever be in a film. But I don't know, man. It's kind of, you know, I feel like there's benefits to sticking down and watching a two-hour film, sitting there and actually full attention, not on the phone, giving your full undivided attention to a film. There's a lot of benefits.
All right, well, we're going to I'm tired of this segment. How's that?
Yeah. Been doing it for a while.
I've been doing it for a while. I'm tired of this segment. So when we come back, we are going to close things out. Greg Salerno, it is our Circa Day. He's hanging out down at the Stadium Swim. He may be there till next week. We don't know. Griff and I are back here at the Finley's Toyota Studio to close things out in just a moment.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Cofield and Company winding it down on a Thursday. We appreciate you hanging out with us today. Greg Salerno down at Circa. Willie Ramirez and Griff here in the Finley Toyota studio. Thanks to our guest, Ann O'Neill, Las Vegas Aces analyst, our legal expert, Xavier Pope. We also had former UNLV football coach Jeff Horton and Hall of Fame writer Kevin Ioli talking a little boxing, little Golden Knights, little Vegas. And then there's Greg Salerno. Greg, my friend, you sent something in that's very interesting and obviously a hot topic around the NFL this week, I guess. After all the hype and arguing about what will happen with each Sanders son, that being Shador, that being Shiloh, and then you ask the question, will either Sanders even see the field this season? Fair question.
Oh, I thought you were asking Griffin. Sorry.
I was just...
No, I appreciate you. Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny to think back because at one point on this show, on other shows, on national shows, we were literally talking about, is Cam Ward or Shador going to go number one overall? Then he winds up going all the way down to the fifth round. And now, I mean, he's the third quarterback on the Browns, and we all know the third quarterback hardly ever sees the field, if ever. Sometimes they're not even activated. And then you got Shiloh throwing a punch, maybe not even having a team, maybe not have anywhere to play. I mean, just the turnaround from where we were and the conversations we were having in the offseason when it first began to now is just kind of crazy.
I don't. I'm not giving up on Sanders reaching an NFL field this year. I think it's actually very likely we will possibly see Shador under center for the Cleveland Browns this year, maybe midseason, maybe. Who knows? You got a 40-something-year-old starting quarterback. The second or the backup quarterback is Dylan Gabriel, a rookie who is in his shorter stature, possibly going to be a little bit more, at risk for injury. So I really think we're going to see Shador at some point during this NFL season hit the field, and then how he looks and how he does from that point, we'll find out.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Griff. I mean, I think he's in line to take the field at some point, and again, it's hard to say Flacco's going to be able to last as long. And one of the reasons, by the way, that he's in good line to take the field is because of a trade the Browns made a guy that you're familiar with, not because he made any noise with your team, but he was with the Eagles. Kenny Pickett, now a member of the Las Vegas Raiders. He took the field, practice field, I should say, and he actually talked about being a member of the Las Vegas Raiders.
Just, you know, they showed me, you know, just the process to become a champion. Like, every single day I understood it from, you know, the front office to the coaching staff to the players. Everything's connected. You're doing everything for a reason. There are no questions on what the standard is. And I think having that, seeing it day by day, where if a guy gets out of line a little bit, the whole team's there to stop him back in and we're going again. So the main goal was the Super Bowl. Everyone's goal was that, from first on the depth chart to third. Guys were working hard, staying after practice, staying extra in meetings. You know, there's no secret to be great. So that when you have that throughout the roster, throughout the team, you know, you'll find those results on Sundays.
He's certainly with the, I believe, you know, a staff that can embrace. I mean, it's... You know, they bring him in to back up Geno Smith, and I think Geno Smith, I've said this time and time again, I said it this morning with the guys on Raider Nation Radio, Vinny and Clay, that I think the presence of Ashton Jeanty and the confidence that this kid comes with, the poise, the pro readiness, it's going to allow Geno Smith to do, to focus a little bit more and not worry mentally in the back of his mind of having to carry a rookie running back. That could, you know, that could be trying for a starting quarterback in the NFL when you got a rookie starting running back that's expected to take over the backfield and become RB1 while you're trying to stabilize the passing game. I mean, from what I've seen out at training camp and saw in the preseason, this kid is ready to run. And I think he's ready to, you know, not only be productive out of the backfield, but catch balls out of the backfield as well. So, as for Kenny Pickett, you know, if he's needed and his number's called, I think he's in a good position with the right organization. I mean, I'm sure there are a number of them out there that he could have fit in well with, but I think this is a good spot for him.
You know, it's funny, as an Eagles fan, like, he gave us one of the funniest moments in football history when he kind of held onto the ball and did that flip last year or whatever, that little thing. But otherwise, he actually is a pretty talented player. I mean, he's got skills. He can throw the ball. He's got arm talent. And I do think for Chip Kelly's offense, if he did have to play, he is one of those guys that's, you know, accurate, you know, can make the quick passes that Chip Kelly likes. So I do think he could be an asset to the Raiders if something happened, obviously, God forbid, to Geno Smith, but hopefully he doesn't have to.
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. I think Kenny Pickett's going to be beneficial, not just because of his skill set, but what he was describing in that soundbite. He was on the roster with the Eagles when they went all the way and won the game, won the Super Bowl. I mean, there's got to be some benefits, especially when you heard him talk about the practices of that team, of the members of the Eagles, and how they prepared, how they worked throughout the year to ultimately be the best team in the NFL at the end of the year. So I think maybe it's a big benefit with Kenny. It could be he comes in, it's more of a leadership position where it's, you know, hey, you know, what were the work ethic? What was the work practices of those guys? What were they doing? What was the extra stuff they were doing in order to kind of get over that edge? So I could see Kenny Pickett coming in and being that voice. He even said during the presser today, him and Geno Smith are training partners. They have a great relationship. He actually worked in the offseason with rookie Cam Miller as well. So that seems like a real tight-knit quarterback room. You got experience, Super Bowl experience in one of your guys, and of course Geno Smith being your starter, being a pretty good caliber starter. So I think they've got a lot of good stuff going on right now going into this year.
Real quick, back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
All right, let's wrap things up. Greg, you sent this over. You must be – you excited? The A's are going to play a homestand here in Vegas.
You know what? I am excited. I want to see it. I love Aviators Ballpark. I think it's one of the nicest ballparks I've seen, minor league or pro, whatever. I mean, it's still pro, but I think it's great. And I think it'll be a chance for the local fans to be able to go see their team before they get here. And it's about time, because we've been talking about it forever, and it's time the locals got to go see the team play.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting and intriguing, and I think the town's going to become a lot energized when they start seeing metal structures go up there on Tropicana and Las Vegas Boulevard. And as the stadium construction sort of progresses, and then next year the A's play in town, we've got Big League Weekend, and then they come and visit, it will be exciting. So Once again, thanks to our guest, Greg. Great job today out there at Circa holding it down. Try to make it home safe, buddy.
I'm going to work on it.
I'm not sure what trouble you're going to get into, but try to keep it safe and sane. Griff, appreciate you, brother. We're back tomorrow. I won't be, but Cofield & Company will. We appreciate you. ESPN Las Vegas, Cofield & Company.